Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay, very good. So I'm very happy to be here again at the Fields Institute, and thanks for the organizers to allow me to speak. Because I was also pretty late with the abstract, and because this is really work in progress and very recent results. So that's the waste of the Speer theorem. It's due to Gromov, and so from 2003, and then later Mamarian corrected some details or filled in some gaps that he claimed. I'm not sure how serious these gaps really are. So it's from 09, and then Karasev and Volovikov generalized this. I think last year. It says the following. So suppose we have a map F from an n-dimensional sphere to an k-dimensional manifold, where n is at least k, and I missed this and also in the abstract, unfortunately, we need that the degree of F is odd, is even, if n is equal to k. So that's a requirement that is actually very important. Then there exists a point Z in the range such that the pre-image is very large, in the sense that the volume of an epsilon neighborhood of the pre-image of Z, so U epsilon means the epsilon neighborhood, is at least as big as the volume of the epsilon neighborhood of the standard equator of dimension k minus n. And this for all epsilon. Not only the existing small epsilon, such as this holds for all epsilon. Well, which is at least, which is larger than zero, maybe. So that's basically a certain isoparametric inequality type theorem. But what I especially like about this is that it proves that there exist large pre-images, which is in the type of theorems that I'm interested in, quite a strong theorem, and the method is also pretty interesting actually. So let's draw a picture. So suppose this is the two-dimensional sphere. That's the one-dimensional equator. And we map it to a circle. So M is just a circle. Then this theorem says that we have a Z such as a pre-image. It may look like that. It's large in the sense that this epsilon neighborhood for any epsilon is at least as large as the epsilon neighborhood of this equator. Okay. So because 2 minus 1 is 1. So the topic of my talk is a parameterized version. Oh, probably you can't read this here. So suppose instead of a map from the sphere to some manifold, we have a family of maps. And the family should be parameterized by a base space, say B. Okay? So the domain of our map will be B times Sn. Here we just project down to the first component, to B. And we want the fiber-wise map F. to some manifold fiber bundle, which is which I denote by that, by E. Yeah, so E is a fiber bundle over B with canonical fiber M. M is this scalar dimensional manifold. And then this diagram should commute, which means that F maps fibers to fibers. And now I claim again that there exists now a subset V. Oh, and we also need this if K is equal to N, then the degree of F at every fiber is even. Then there exists a set Z and E such that for all Z in Z, we have that the pre-image in the fiber is again large, so the volume of F minus 1 of Z and the epsilon neighborhood inside in some fiber, which is again an Sn, is at least as large as the volume of the epsilon neighborhood of an n minus k sphere. So this is of course trivial because Z could be empty, but this parameterized version now says that Z is actually large. So this solution manifold for this parameterized problem is large in the following sense. Namely that if you take this map, say this is P, then in cohomology we get the map from the cohomology of the base space B to the one of Z. And here I'm using Cech cohomology with F2 coefficients, then I want that this is injective. So I should say why I use Cech cohomology. The only reason basically is that it's that it has this continuity property. Otherwise, one can, if you want here only to use ordinary cohomology with F2 coefficients, then a lot of things could go wrong. And I guess one could also construct counterexamples, or at least, yeah. Yeah, probably one could construct some kind of counterexamples, or at least it would be really complicated to show it. So generally, it turns out that there are many other similar statements. That can be proved with similar methods. So for example, a very simple theorems are a parameterized Helly theorem. Yeah, so Helly's theorem says if you have a certain family of convex sets in d-dimensional Euclidean space and any d plus 1 of them intersect, then all of them intersect non-empty. And suppose now you have not only given some convex sets, but you parameterize those sets. So over a given base space B again. So for every point in B, you have a family of convex sets, which vary somehow continuously with B. And then I claim that the similar statement holds, and actually for this parameterized Helly theorem, something much stronger holds because, here one doesn't only get this, but basically for every family of such convex sets, you can just state that where the exact solution set is, namely the intersection of all the sets. So basically, one gets nearly a map from B to the solution set, which is not completely continuous, but if you make it into a multi map, then it's continuous. And in a similar way, there's a parameterized Radus center point theorem, which was actually used by Volovikov, by Živaljevich to prove the center-transversal theorem, which comes from discrete geometry. I don't want to go into this. Then there's a parameterized time sandwich theorem. One can also talk about Zwerberg-type theorems, so a parameterized topological Zwerberg theorem. A colored Zwerberg theorem. And also recently we had some obtained some colored topological Zwerberg theorem for manifolds. I just want to mention this. Because here the techniques are basically exactly the same as the ones that we have to use for this parameterized waste of the sphere theorem. And so the main motivation for putting this into the title of my talk is that here it's first of all very beautiful, and second point is that here the techniques are pretty complicated and interesting. So much more complicated than in these two cases, so this is easy. Everything else is this is pretty easy, but this becomes already very complicated. So what's the main idea? So Gromov's proof. Oh, maybe I should say what Gromov did. Gromov proved everything where this manifold here is R to the K. So for Euclidean ranges, Gromov proved this theorem, and Karasev and Volovikov could replace this by a manifold, which is also in the on the topological part considerably more complicated. But Gromov's proof has two parts. First of all, a topological one, and an analytic one. And I here want to sketch the topological main idea. The topological main idea is a certain mass partition problem that he could solve. It's the following following theorem. So again, let F be a map from Sn to Mk with even degree. N is k. And now let Q be a prime power. Say Q is P to the L for some prime P. Then there exist Q convex sets, or there exists a partition, rather, of Sn into a disjoint union of convex sets, say V1 up to VQ, such that well, all of them have equal measure. First of all, so with respect to the standard measure on the sphere, well, F maps center points. The centers of all the V's to the same point. Where C is your favorite center map. So if you have a particular center map that you want to have, so to every convex set you associate a center point in some continuous way, then you can use this C, and the theorem will hold for this center map. And actually, more can be said. So for all epsilon, so epsilon should be less larger than zero, and all vi are epsilon close to some n minus k dimensional equator. And this is basically the topological part of the proof. And maybe you can imagine that this is enough, and I don't want to go into the analytic part, but that this is enough to prove the weight of the sphere theorem. Because, so suppose you have here your sphere, and you cut it into convex sets. I don't know, maybe like that. If you cut it into a lot of sets, and then if the map is mapping to an S1 or so, then and all the V's are very close to a n minus k dimensional subsphere, then maybe all of the sets basically will maybe look like that, and maybe not like that. So they may more or less. Oh, it's hard to draw. But if you have now center points in here that get mapped to the same point Z in here, then these V's, since they are very close to an n minus k dimensional subsphere, they look somehow like a normal bundle. Also, yes. Oh, epsilon close. They lie in some epsilon neighborhood of some n minus k dimensional subsphere. No. Yeah, thanks. And now I claim that the same theorem holds in a parameterized version. So, same theorem in parameterized terms. Well, maybe I should not write this down because there's not enough time for that, but the proof method is the use of a certain parameterized Borsuk-Ulam or Bogan-Young-Volovikov type theorem. And this goes as follows. Maybe since there's time, it's good to even write this down. But for this, I need to do some definitions, actually. Generally, if you have a map from X to Y to B, which is a G equivariant map, so G is a group that acts on X and also on B, and the map preserves this group action. That's what the symbol means. And suppose B is a trivial G space. Then what Fadel and Tosini did is that they created some kind of Borsuk-Ulam type theorems in a very general fashion by defining a certain index, namely what's now called a cohomological ideal valued index, or the Fadel-Husseini index. It's the following thing. This is I denote this by that of X. This is defined as the kernel of the map from equivariant cohomology of the space B to the equivariant cohomology of the space X induced by this map, where I should tell you also what kind of equivariant cohomology I mean. By that I just mean here in this case the Cech cohomology of EG times X with F2 coefficients. EG can be thought of can be thought of the infinite join of groups of the same group G with a diagonal action. So I take here the product and quotient out the group itself. This is called the Borel construction, so that's why this type of equivariant cohomology is also called equivariant Borel cohomology or bundle cohomology, and this is a very nice invariant of this G map from X to B. Namely, since I have here a kernel, this sits inside the equivariant cohomology of the space B. Since B was trivial, this is just the cohomology of the group itself, tensor the cohomology of B. And it's an idea in that, because it's a kernel of a map of rings. So that's why it's also called ideal valued index. And what I need also here for my Borsuk-Ulam type theorem or Volovikov type theorem is another index. Which is, I don't know, maybe I should just define it. I call it index infinity of the space X. For this, one takes the kernel in a very similar fashion of the infinity page of the spectral sequence of BG to B, where BG just, so this is the Borel construction. XG, so in the same way one defines BG, B sub G, and this gives the morphism in spectral sequences. And especially on the infinity page, we get we can actually calculate this often enough easily. So this looks maybe very technical, but it's natural and it's often enough easy to compute. So it's both of these indices have some advantages and disadvantages. Unfortunately, this one also has a disadvantage, namely, maybe I'm confusing because I don't tell you why this is good, why one looks at this. Maybe I should say this. So if you have a situation like, let's say, you know the infinity index of this space, which we do because this is a product of B times a very, very nice space. Actually one takes the Q for a product of that to make it into a group, into a G space, where here we are taking G as the pseudo subgroup P of the symmetric group on Q elements. If we know the infinity index of basically the configuration space of Q points in Sn times B, so this would be all space X, then we can basically calculate with a certain Borsuk-Ulam type theorem that I don't write down now, the Fadel-Hussein index of the solution set. Yeah. So if you know the infinity index of that, the parameterized Borsuk-Ulam theorem will give you the Fadel-Hussein index of the solution set. So the set of, in this case, the set of Q tuples of points on the sphere that will get mapped to the same point in E. And actually, if we don't only look at this map E, but also store the information about how large these cells are, then we get exactly what we want. So I'm sorry for being very, very imprecise, and I'm aware of that, but it's hard to put all of this into such a short talk. And what I just want to mention is that instead of looking at this infinity page, you can just take a spectral sequence valued index, which is, of course, much more rich in on the information. And we don't only have this choice of taking these two spectral sequences. We instead of taking this associated vibration, we can also look at the one that just maps XG to BG, or the one that maps XG to B times BG. So actually, we would get three different kinds of indices and spectral sequences associated to this. Currently, I'm thinking about some kind of higher dimensional spectral sequence that puts all of those things together. And maybe I should stop here to allow questions if there are any. Okay, thank you.